Alright, time for another DraftPhysics.com video presentation. I believe I'll join the conversation. DebatePhysics.com also. Yeah, it's right up there. So we'll do some comments. So kinetic energy will probably be part of the conversation, and then probably something on magnetism, maybe dipoles, and I don't think I need that yet. No, I need this one. All right. So on the website, a couple of snarky, useless, junk, garbage comments. Unsigned, of course. You know, whatever. You know, by people that can't make a civil argument or provide evidence for what they say. They just, you know, attempt to trigger. So, okay, it says, in your latest video, you talk about removing friction. I talk about the fact that friction is a way of you losing your energy. That when you have contact with something else and you're moving, you start to exchange your energy with that object. I've said it over and over again. I've pointed it out clearly that I believe that energy is something possesses, that it's an arrangement of the matter, that the wrench flying through space is physically different than the wrench just sitting on Earth, that they have different arrangements of their internal matter that make it possible for one to be flying through space and the other sitting on the Earth. Now, they're both moving in directions, but they're different directions. And the different directions are a product of them having movement inside of them. The little electrons and protons are in arrangements, okay, that make the difference. They possess their energy. It's a real thing. It really is just masses moving. That's energy. Something with mass moving energy. So obviously I'm saying photons do have real mass, not rest mass or some other kind. No, they have real mass because they have real momentum. Anyway, so if you want to sit there and say, I want to find out how much energy something has, you have to apply some sort of contact with the object and attempt to drain its difference. The difference in its motion versus the thing you're touching it with, right? So if two things are flying through space together, it doesn't matter if they touch. It's when things have different motions, then when they have contact, they'll exchange those motions and you can measure how much difference there is in their motion. That's measuring their energy. Okay, so you have to have friction in an experiment. If you expect to measure something's energy, you have to extract it from the object. You can't measure it otherwise. If you just have two things, you know, this is going 50 miles an hour and this is going 100 miles an hour. Well, we know that, you know, at any portion of time that there's going to be a strict 2-to-1 relationship in how far they're going to go. So you can't use how far they're going to go to, you know, in anything other than a superficial way, measure their energy. Now, I would say that that experiment works. So if you do that in space and you watch the 50 mile an hour go that far and the 100 mile an hour thing goes that far, twice as far, it's really telling you, yeah, one of them has twice as much energy as the other one. Okay, but you're not going to get that because you're not smart enough. All right, so that was what the conversation was about. Somebody's proposing an experiment where they remove all the friction. And my argument is, well, if you remove all the friction, you're going to get my answer to the question, how much energy does it have? Well, it's going to have twice as much. It's not going to have four times as much. And so it all just comes down to extraction method. So the underlying statement that you're evading is that friction does change depending on how fast you're going. The faster you go in terms of your contact with a surface or an object, the quicker your interaction, the less likely you are to exchange energy. So obviously the faster you're going, the less friction there is when you're in gravity. Gravity. Okay, so, and that's the rule. So if you're going 100 miles an hour, your energy is drained less quickly. Quickly is the wrong word. Less per foot. Okay, less per inch, less per millimeter of the contact will produce a drainage of your energy. Now, if you use time, okay, you'll get the right answer because something will go four times the distance, but it'll do four times the distance in only twice the time. And I've emphasized that in about 20 or 30 videos now, where I've pointed out that when something falls in gravity, yeah, it's four times the distance. You put it four times higher to just go twice as fast, but it only takes twice as long. It's only in the gravity twice as long. Said it over and over again. And you ignore it. Yeah. Because it's a fact, and it's a fact you can't refute. Okay. So anyway, seems perfect for an air track, no? No, it's already been pointed out the flaws in an air track. I can draw some of the flaws, and then you can see the point. But, I mean, it's not all that. Okay, so unless the air track is carefully engineered, it has kind of glaring liabilities. all right, so you can sort of understand that if you're using a cushion of energy, okay, that is, you're pushing something up, all right, with air. All right, so you have air and a bunch of holes in the track, and so there's a bunch of air that something is floating on. So we'll just draw it as this is the floating object. All right, you could sort of understand. Oh, yeah, that's not even close. Camera. All right, that isn't straight. That really doesn't look right, but we'll go with it anyway. All right, and so now they glide nicely on the cushion of air, so there's less contact, so less friction, so they don't lose their energy because the only thing they're hitting are air molecules. And so far so good. The problem is that the cushion in air, of course, you know, things wobble in it, so if they're not weighted just right, they end up, you know, jittering and wobbling, which is sort of a problem because all of that wobble and such is being created by the extra energy you're adding here. This is energy plus you're adding to the system. So the problem is you want to do an experiment where you're going to bang them into each other, and even if you put springs on it, the problem is when they hit each other, okay, you can see it even with car crashes, you know, what happens is the thing hits the brick wall, and this end, okay, when it hits, tends to go up, right? So things move, you know, depending. They want to escape. The energy has to try to go this way or this way when it hits an impediment. When two things crash into each other, the energy doesn't disappear. It goes in the due directions, okay? That's what happens when you have a collision. It doesn't, like, these two things just cancel and the energy stops. No, the energy actually moves in other directions. It has to escape somewhere. All right. So the problem with the air track is these two things can hit each other, and what they can do is lift up, you know, and push down. And when they do that, they add energy because they tilt. So you can understand that if some object was tilted on the air track, you'd understand that, oh, okay, the air is going to tend to go this way. All right, it's going to escape from one side more than it's going to escape from the other side. That means that in this crash, you know, it's like more of the energy is going down than it's going up. And you know what happens if that happens. It's like it's going to push both things in a direction. so the obvious here and with this is that you're creating an exhaust in this direction. So you're going to give it extra energy in this direction. That extra energy is coming from your air. So you're adding energy to the cart with the air you're providing to, you know, get rid of your friction. So it's a source of extra energy. So you don't end up with a crash where you have 100%, you know, you have a certain amount of momentum here and a certain amount of momentum here, and you conserve the momentum. You can end up not conserving it because you're adding energy to the system, or in some ways, you know, subtracting energy, because say it has an acceleration this way and it lifts up this way, the extra energy will be against its motion in this direction, so the crash will not be the same crash because you'll be reducing the velocity of the one object to the other object. So anyway, those subtle liabilities mean, yeah, making a homemade air track that's less than precisely weighted, and you know the amount of pressure you're creating, and you have to balance the weight of the cards and all kinds of things have to be just right, or the thing doesn't work very well. And you know, it's just truth. So I would argue that yes, air tracks are better than not air track, but it still has to be done rather carefully, because there are catches. And so if you want to show me, you know, that there's no such catches, I'm just going to show you the opposite, where I can show you videos where you can see the experiment does actually create extra momentum, you know, fails to get a rational answer. Okay. But there are air track videos that prove you wrong, so that's not true. There's air track videos that prove me right, and then there's air track videos that prove some other truth. Okay, so that's the truth of it. All right, now you're saying you're picking which ones you think are real good experiments, and I'm picking the ones I think are better experiments. So I've pointed out the most famous of them, which is the Professor Lewin video, and I've shown pretty direct evidence that his results are fake. Now, nobody has responded to any of those critiques in any way and explained how I'm wrong to suggest it's fake. Okay, the weight of the carts cannot be 2-to-1. There's no possibility because he doesn't have the right attachments on the carts. You can just visually look at the carts and you can basically prove that one of them can't weigh twice as much as the other one. It's missing matter. If it's missing matter, it can't possibly, okay, have the weight he's just stated it has. So, you know, the evidence is decisive. The blobs of clay are not an illusion, or they're not there for fun. They're there for specific reasons, okay, to create that imbalance in mass. So again, you want to say there are air track videos that prove me wrong? Well, they don't, okay, and what there is a lot of reason for rational and decent and honest people to have some suspicion that they've engineered experiments to come out the way they want. Their math says so. They're forcing the experiment to fit their math. Not a complex accusation. All right. So you've moved the goalpost again. There's no goalpost moving. The hunt for the perfect experiment to demonstrate the collection of energy has been an ongoing process. I say the lever solves all of these problems. It's pretty direct and unfuck-upable. And so the conversation should be over because the lever's fairly decisive in producing the a clear, visual, easy-to-see result. So maybe I'll draw the lever. Yeah, that would probably be a good idea. Oh, we don't need this, because we'll finish reading that, and then we'll bring that back when I erase. All right, so I guess we probably read enough. I'll just read it again. But there are air track videos that prove you wrong, so you've moved the goalposts again. So there was no moving of any goalpost. There's just this effort by numerous people to find a piece of decisive evidence that isn't like, oh yeah, we just go find the video that shows what we want to show. No, we show a piece of evidence that can't be deconstructed into a pile of crap. And that's what we've been seeking, and tried different experiments to try to make that possible. I used a ballistic pendulum, but it had its flaws because, you know, when the object swings in, it was a long piece of steel. And what it did is when it hits, it tilts, you know. And that means if you're measuring its, you know, if you're measuring speed based on frame rate, well, if I've changed the size of the object, it obviously makes measuring it's by frame rate makes measuring velocities more difficult. It creates noise. Now I said my results were pretty decisive, but yeah, it is anybody can argue that okay, well, it's not as precise as it needs to be. It has some flaws, defects. Yeah, experiments with defects. So all of this comes down to your understanding of energy and then your understanding of gravity. And that's where the fundamental argument is. And the mechanics of objects. So there's two things I could argue, right? Springs are one thing. Okay, now it's pretty much established, proven fact. Even the Brozo will admit, this is, Hooke's law, blah, 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 that springs, I put a 50 weight here. Okay, the spring stretches this much. I put 100 weight on. It's going to compress or stretch twice as much. Okay, that there's a perfectly linear relationship between mass and how much a spring measures. Okay, it works as a scale. Okay, your bathroom scale can tell the difference between a 50-pound person and a 100-pound person. And it does it really reliably. And so there's this argument that's in the background of all of these conversations that if I launch something with a spring, okay, with twice the compression, that somehow I don't get twice the speed. That somehow the spring can't put twice as much energy, okay, into the object, even though it has twice the compression, twice the pressure, twice the weight it's pushing with. It doesn't work. It's only 1.4 more. That's the argument, okay? The bowler can't throw the 8-pound bowling ball twice as fast as the 16-pound ball. Somehow he can only throw it 1.4 as fast. These are the arguments being made, okay? So, and to me, those are just laughably stupid in the sense that, no, we know that if it's twice the compression, it's going to be going twice the velocity. And if I put a half mass here, on this one, and I use the same compression, okay, I have a spring with the same exact compression, all right, and I put a 100-pound person on it, or a 50-pound, okay, that it's the same thing as the momentum argument. You change the velocity, you change this, you got to conserve the momentum. This is definitely going twice as fast. You don't agree with that, okay? Your people, your group, your community of wackos, okay, doesn't accept these simple truths as a premise for any of these experiments, so they can't go very far. This argument doesn't, so I'm not changing any goalpost. You keep arguing for truths that I'd say are preposterous. I can throw a bowling ball, an 8-pound ball, twice as fast. I can shoot an object with twice as much spring compression twice as fast. If I put different mass objects on, the spring can go fast enough to, the spring is like the lever. The spring can compress really fast, or it can compress really slow. Okay, it can collect energy in those two forms, and it will accurately read the amount of energy you use. So you can have a heavy object going slow or a light object going fast, and it will collect the energy, all right, and do it accurately. And then it can release in the same way. It can release the energy fast and create a fast acceleration, or it can create a slow acceleration depending on the mass. I put a heavier, twice as heavy object on, it goes half the speed, and it can give it the full measure of the energy. It conserves energy. Now, they're not perfect, okay? There is heat and bullshit that happens to the spring, so yeah, you lose some of it, but the better the spring, better its manufacturing or what it's made out of. Springs have different utility. I mean, a slinky isn't very good at doing this energy thing, okay, in terms of compressing and giving it back because it has so much wire and it loses more energy. But the less wire you have, the more stiff the spring is, the more of your energy you're going to get back. All right. So then we're to the lever. And this one really does illustrate it. You can really see what's confusing you. That's what I'm going to say. You're confused. All right? I've tried to explain that gravity is an illusion. Okay? There's four times the height to go twice as fast. Galileo explained it. Okay? It's twice the time. it's twice the velocity, okay? Yeah, it's four times the distance, okay? But it doesn't matter because gravity is a time-dependent force. It matters how long you're in the gravity. I've drawn this image over and over again, you know? You have a gravitational body, you're zooming by it. The faster you go, the less you're affected because you're in the gravity less time. All right, so this is a Galileo thing, right? The first second you do this tiny bit of distance when you're falling, and the second you do this huge amount of distance when you're falling. The same thing, you know, going back up. But the truth is, if you want to double the velocity, you're stuck with this small unit of time for that first unit of distance, and that's what this one is stuck with. It has to get going, and so it's fighting the gravity. And in this sense, it only gets to this height. And to double the velocity, that's you're right. You have to create this twice the velocity thing so you can get all this extra distance before you do this, right? So this is just this here. You don't get to, say if you're falling in gravity, you don't get to your speed until you've done this. The speed you start with here is the speed you have here. Just one quarter of your distance falling. You've only gone one quarter of the distance and you're already going as fast as this was when it took off. See, you gotta understand that's how gravity works. So the lever kind of shows you this trick of gravity because I can have an object moving this fast here and I have an object going twice as fast here. That's it. It's going twice the velocity. And this is oscillating with one velocity. It's going one amount of distance per oscillation. This is going twice the amount of distance. Now, if I put in enough energy to cause them to leave the lever, lift off, all of a sudden, this one going twice the velocity, this line goes four times. Okay, this line. Now, this one leaves, it doesn't go, this one is dramatically different than this one on liftoff into gravity. So once they're going to gravity, I get this 4-to-1 relationship. But when they're on the lever, it's only a 2-to-1 relationship. So it's sort of showing you that gravity is different than when you're pushing an object with another object's velocity. When this velocity is pushing this half mass through the lever, it's not obeying the rules of gravity. And it's not until I lift them off that you see this bizarre twice the velocity equals four times the distance. On the lever, it's 2-to-1. It's not until they leave and go into gravity, and now they're only being affected by gravity. Gravity's the only friction now, the only force that's stealing their velocity, so to speak. Do I get the 4-to-1 relationship? All right. But you can't understand that. You can't understand that gravity is about time. It's about how long you're in the force that's pushing on you. Yeah. It matters how long you're in the force that's pushing you. Sorry, you're an idiot. Anyway, okay, I didn't move any goalposts. The goalposts have been in the same positions from the very beginning. The same things are still being argued. The same arguments are still being made. Show me the 8-pound bowling ball going twice as fast as a 16-pound ball, knocking down twice as many pins. So don't show me it rolling further. Show me it doing more work. Okay, so come up with some way for these objects to do work so then we can see. So go ahead and let's see how to put a string, okay, and do the, you know, heat the water, find out some way to collect the energy from the 16-pound ball and the energy from the 8-pound ball. I say the pins are a perfect way to do it because you can already know theoretically that each contact with each pin, you can already calculate how much energy the object loses by hitting the pin. You know how much the pin weighs, you know how fast the object's going, you know how much energy the pin's going to collect, and you could just do the math. I already did it. I showed a chart of the math, and yes, the 8-pound ball gives away a huge amount of energy because it's going faster with the first three or four pins it hits, but by the time it gets to the seventh or eighth pin, Now, all of a sudden, the 16-pound ball is giving away twice as much energy as the 8-pound ball. So it all evens out in the end. You know, the chart goes like this, and the other chart goes like that. So, you know, one slope is one way, and if you take the two chunks of time and energy dissipation, the 16-pound ball is giving away a lot more energy 1.5 seconds into the process, and the 8-pound ball is giving away more energy in the first second. That's simple. But you can't understand any of this, right? It's over your head. You can't counter-argue any of these exact points. You won't draw a drawing. You won't explain how springs really work. You won't explain how levers really work. You won't explain how bowling balls really work. You won't explain how wrecking balls really work. You're the one moving goalposts by just evading the points made and then slandering the points made with this mush that I said something. Now, I didn't say any of this crap. made your perfect experiment more and more specific. Okay, made your perfect experiment more and more specific. So again, this idea of perfect experiment, I'm just saying that we're all looking for that. I have suggested some experiments, and yes, the trick is you have to find a way to do them where you're not fucking it up. The experiments have to be done carefully. I've advocated that from the beginning. Is that a sin? People say, well, just do it in your backyard. Just do it, you know, on the basement floor. Just do it sloppy and carelessly, and then you can engineer it to give the results you want, okay, and you think that's good science and good physics. No, I think it's crap. All right. And you'll just keep doing it over and over again. Doing what over and over again? Drawing a lever and explaining how this thing conserves momentum. And when it does that, it proves your theory of kinetic energy is impossible. Because levers do, in fact, by your definition of what energy is, they create free energy. Every time I do a conversion from a heavy object and I put the energy into a lighter object, I make free energy. And I can make thousands of times more free energy by just shooting a gun. By shooting a gun, I make free energy. The gun only has 2 joules of recoil. The bullet has 2,000 joules. So somehow I have 2,002 joules by your kinetic energy theory says the explosion has 2,002 joules of energy. And the momentum theory says, no, it's just 4 joules. It's a little tiny bit of explosion. You know, yes, the bullet's very light, 1,000 times lighter than the gun. So it goes 1,000 times faster. So what? What's miraculous about that? Nothing. It's a small amount of mass going fast is the same thing as a big giant pile of mass going slow. Same energy. That's the thing you're saying isn't true. And I'm saying everything about physics demonstrates it to be true. Galileo believed it, Descartes believed it, and Newton believed it, and they believed it for a damn good reasons. And you changed all of those truths for very bad reasons. All right. Moron. Asshole. All right, so more of the same from the same monster. No one is engaging with your double-slit crap. So the crap of the double-slit experiment. So let's go to the drawing board. Oh, these people are just so pathetic. All right, we're back. So the double-slit and the most glaring, the biggest I gotcha kind of thing, whatever, however you want to describe it, the elephant fact in the room is that the pattern has some nuance to it, and you can't just say double-slit experiment. Okay, that's bullshit. Okay, so this would be your single slit experiment. I should have made this one a little smaller. Yeah, okay, all right, double maxima and then nodes. So these are one amount of size, and this is 2x that size. Okay, in the single slit. And then the double slit experiment is basically saying now you have little dots inside of, okay, that envelope. All right, and then you have dots here. and you have dots here, and there's been, you know, Brozo pretty decisively recognized by doing variable sizes that this is always an odd number here, okay, and it's twice this number, right? So this is 3, then this, you know, it's 3 plus 3 is 6, and this ends up being 5. If this is 4, 4 plus 4 is 8, this ends up being 7. That kind of relationship exists. So you have this kind of complex, obviously complex pattern, right? I mean, it's basically two different single slit experiments. It's a single slit with a very wide opening, okay, that would create these little bars, and a very narrow opening, which would create these big single slits. So if I broke this double slit pattern into two single slit patterns, it wouldn't be this one and this one, in the sense that this one in isolation and this one in isolation. It would be this one, okay, and this one, this distance, okay, the small distance plus the widest distance. That's the two slit experiment that you actually end up doing, the two you're combining. So if you moved two single slits into each other, what you're creating is this outside dimension here, this big opening, and then this little one. Okay, and that's what's creating the overlap of the two slit experiment, the two opening experiment. You're really just saying I'm taking two single slit experiments and of two different configurations. One of this configuration, little dots. These are the two kinds you can have. You can do a single slit experiment and you can have it look like this, or you can have it look like this. And the difference between the two is this one's a little narrow opening, this one's a wide opening. And you're just seeing that the double slit is exactly that. So I've explained all of that. So that's the big reveal. Now, what's a fact is when they do the math, they don't do the math. They sit there and say that, no, there's two waves. Now, in a single slit, there's no way to see the two waves, right? I do a single slit experiment, they can't draw it because, yeah, it's just one wave. There's no interference. So they never draw it. Because if they had to draw it, they'd have to put the waves somewhere. And where are you going to put them? Where are you going to put the two waves? Oh, you're going to have them break here in the center? Well, that math isn't right, because then your centers are here and your distance would have to be that distance. What do they use as the distance? The edge here, this edge and this edge. They use the distance of the opening, which, as I've pointed out, is exactly, okay, that's exactly what they're doing. You just count the wavelengths, and that'll tell you how many bars there are. So another reveal, another fact that no other video online, no other website explains. No other website explains that simple rule. Okay, so the double slit, this is the Young double slit drawing. Now, it's clear that two waves can't possibly do this pattern. Can't happen. Can't describe it, can't make it happen, can't it can't make this on off, and it can't make this double maxima. So two waves are missing two things. It's missing a double maxima, and it's missing these breaks. You won't account for any of that. So two waves will either make this pattern or this pattern. It can't make this pattern. Can't do it. You have to have the four sources. You can't do it with two sources here and here and use this distance in the math and get the right answers. It won't happen. It won't be a double slit pattern. This is the double slit pattern. You want to call this a double slit pattern? It's not. You want to call this a double slit pattern? It's not. This is the double slit pattern. All right, so you're the one changing goalposts, where you're not even going to rationally identify a pattern that's so classic. Without the envelope pattern, it is not the double slit pattern. Okay, and two waves can't do it, because you can't create any vectors here. There's not enough vectors. And the real key is, you want this pattern, you have to have four point sources, four vectors. You have to have two distances. You have to have a small distance to create the envelope. Those vectors will all add up. And then you have to have a big distance, all right, to create lots of wavelengths of difference, lots of places where there can be an on-off. That creates this pattern, which is inside of the other envelope pattern. So you need the 4-point sources to make it work. These are facts, okay? Unrefutable, decisive facts that you can't refute. You can't provide any evidence they're wrong. Any statement in here is wrong. You're the one with the fake and phony and unproven and undemonstrated wacky theory. This is the truth. And you're trying to stop the truth. You're trying to suppress the truth, okay? Because you don't give a shit about the truth or science having integrity. You just care about preserving your woo, or you just care about hating me. And that's all you have in your little petty, weaselly life. All right. Okay, no one is engaging with your double slit crap because you're making blatantly false claims. LOL. So they're blatantly false, yet go ahead. Link me to your video. Link me to your leader. Link me to your person doing it right, explaining the double slit correctly. And I will decisively annihilate their video, and you know it, because I've already done it 50 or 60 times. All right, I've played dozens of two-slit videos and demonstrated the lie after the lie after the lie after the lie. All right. Look, the Huygens optics guy just pointed out how the whole fallacy of the Young double-slit experiment is just jargon. It isn't the truth. All right. Like, it doesn't match the pattern. So again, he's putting it in quotes as if I said these words in some sort of nothing context, which is just bullshit. Clearly, the math won't create this pattern. It won't predict this pattern. It'll predict this pattern or this pattern. So anytime you're seeing this pattern, you can't use Jungian math to get the answer. You frankly can't use any of their math unless it's using 4 sources. It has to account for the 4 sources. So the only math you can use is the math for a diffraction gradient. Because, yes, that one has multiple sources in it. The integrals. But anyway, like, it doesn't match the pattern. Single slit is the same as double slit. So I've never said that. What I've pointed out is that Professor Lewin has pointed out that, well, whatever you want to call this shit, diffraction pattern or interference pattern, no, it is the same thing. Now, he believes it's the Huygens pattern, but it doesn't really matter. The single slit is the same phenomenon as the double slit. What's creating the pattern is the same thing. It's either interference or it's diffraction or whatever you want to call it, but it's the same physical mechanism. So he's distorting again another statement, etc., he puts. So, all right, you might as well be saying the moon is made out of cheese. Now, that's exactly what you're arguing. You're arguing a fake and phony physics, fake science, fake mechanisms, fake experiments, fake geometry, fake, fake, fake. And you're doing it overtly and deliberately, which just makes you a disgusting liar. Because you've heard these counter-arguments. You haven't countered them in any way. You haven't made them go away in any way. You haven't done a damn thing to defend your physics. You haven't explained why there's clay on Professor Lewin's carts. You haven't explained why they never redid the Eddington experiment. You haven't explained how two-vector math, two-source math, predicts the double-slit pattern. You haven't done any of that. Because you're a scurvy, lying sack of stinking, smelly, rotten shit. You're human garbage, okay? You have no integrity, you have no decency, you're just a lying, slandering sack of shit on the internet. Talking shit. Alright. We know it, so who's we? I wish you would identify who you consider your leader and your other followers. Are you a Brozosian? I mean, who's the we here? Okay, the retard that thinks there's free energy. the bum with 17 kids. What person, what people are your we's here? All right, we know it obviously isn't. You know anything? You don't know anything. Yet you keep saying it, expecting someone to take you seriously. Now, what I expect is what I thought came with intelligence, which was honesty and integrity. I thought those things, that people who had intelligence would figure out, I don't want to be an asshole. And they wouldn't do things that are just overtly asshole-y, stinking, shitty things. You're a shit-talking piece of shit, all right? Defending shit. Smart people don't do that, all right? So obviously there's a huge gap in your knowledge base, because maybe you do know you memorized pi. It's 3.14684, maybe you know it to 15 digits or something. So maybe there's some intelligence test you could actually pass, but clearly you don't have general intelligence, because you haven't figured out what integrity is and honesty is, and that those are good things. And those are things scientists should really love, like the Faradays, for example, and other scientists who just were so devoted to the cause of just finding the truth. You're not in that cause. I mean, Faraday was wrong about a lot of stuff, okay? But he didn't walk around saying, I'm right, and I'm going to force you to believe I'm right. He made arguments in defense of what he believed. Are you doing that? No. You're just slandering other people. All right, that's how absurd it is. While I'll agree with you, it is absurd, okay, that I have to sit there and defend that there's no free energy. And I have to defend something as simple as springs and levers. But somehow you won't accept that levers just conserve, they conserve momentum and they convert momentum. That's all they do. They just take one form of MV and convert it into another form of NV with the same value. That they can just make something going slow that's heavy into something going that's light and going fast. And that's exactly what they do. And that's exactly what a spring can do. And the fact that you people are denying that simple fact is absurd. It's absurd that I have to sit here in 2023 and defend conservation of momentum and defend the idea that there is no free energy. And even make these arguments that you really don't have any evidence on your side. The Mythbusters, by accident, couldn't even find, they can't find any traces of your kinetic energy theory. They did honest experiments. They weren't trying to disprove your myth, but they did, in fact, bust it all to hell. They proved it by smashing cars into brick walls, and then they proved it by smashing clay. And you still can't let it go. Is it a religion to you? All right, but go ahead. Keep making moon cheese videos. I'm not suggesting you keep talking shit and being a liar and a piece of scum. I think you ought to up your game a little bit and at least do the pretense of being fair and honest. And fair and honest, you haven't responded to a single point made in this video. Every point made in this video still stands as a good, strong point, and you haven't done anything to change that because you're a coward and a weasel. You can't even post a link to a video where your good physics is being done. Your correct physics. Okay, and see how far it gets you. Well, it's not about how far it gets me, frankly. Okay, the game isn't the messenger. The game is the message. The message is, you're living in a silly fantasy land. You haven't got anything right. You don't have the shape of the atom right. You don't have the particles in the atom right. You don't have the mechanisms that's making the shit move right. You've gotten almost every answer to the, 10 top physics points wrong. You don't even know what space is. You don't know what dimensions are. You fucked it all up. Every fucking bit of it that you could do wrong, you did it wrong. Yeah, sorry, you're fucking the wrong hole, assholes, and repeatedly you can't get it right. All right, So, yeah. Okay, enough of that. So we'll move on to a couple of other comments and call it a video. Okay, so let's understand the context again. So for maybe 2 years now, I have been offering thousands of dollars for a well-viewed YouTube channel to take on any of these arguments. Two slit arguments are the kinetic energy arguments more specifically. But I'll talk about gravity or some other subjects also. And they won't do it. I can't pay them to debunk my arguments. They won't take my money. Doesn't matter. They won't even tell me how much it would cost, all right, to get them to make the argument. They're just such cowards. They're obviously cowards. You know, if they're not taking my money to mock me, you know, come on. It's hilarious. You know, I certainly take their money in a second. So that's a context here, okay, is that I'm just asking for somebody to make a stand-up argument and deal with any of these points I've raised, just any of them, and they won't do it. I've been pleading with people to draw a fucking lever on a board and explain how it works and how its function is consistent with the kinetic energy theory, how it works perfectly consistent with kinetic energy theory when it obviously doesn't. So that's the context. Anyway, so this Kevin Bates guy wants to talk. And maybe we can do it this way. Maybe he can just write comments and I'll respond to the comments. So the first comment, he really liked the photon video, the slit video. He thought he learned something from it, blah, blah, blah. So that's fine. So we won't bother going too deep into that one. So we'll just deal with this other comment he left. All right, I agree the guy in the video claimed the magnetic field is moving from north to south. It's not just his claims. You just understand that this is how they always draw the magnet, with these stupid arrows. And the arrows are an electrical consequence of what the magnet does. It's not what the magnet's doing. All right, so it's not a function of the magnet. The magnet doesn't do any of that shit. It doesn't. It's not obeying the right-hand rule. It's when you combine it with some other mechanism, that is, polar atoms, that you end up creating this electrical phenomenon, okay? And so it's just a terrible abuse to sit there and apply some notion that these field lines have motion in them, okay? Faraday was just plain wrong. Okay, Maxwell was right. This was a real problem. I mean, Faraday was getting really old when Maxwell was at his prime. So it's like the two, you know, they had a great deal of respect for each other. And so Maxwell was making a real effort to put Faraday's understanding into his formulation. But I would argue that the simple thing they screwed up in doing that transition from to make the Farah-Maxwell kind of theory, was this argument about the difference between a field line, okay, and a line of force. So I'll just do it real quick, one more time, just to illustrate where the problem is created and why it matters. So Maxwell gave you a simple way of understanding charge by just understanding it's a radius, a radial object, and you can understand it with any number of lines, and you're just saying they're proportionally distanced, and with distance they do the inverse square law, and it works really well as a way of understanding how much force something's applying to something. And if I can have these charges, the truth is we know they're doing an opposite effect. Okay, they have an opposite effect on anything I put in here. So if I put an extra electron here, it will behave exactly the opposite than if it's a proton, right? So if it's an electron, it'll move in a direction. If it's a proton, it'll move in the opposite direction. So you can know right off the bat, this isn't about a direction. Okay, it just depends on what I'm using as a test instrument. We'll decide whether it's going this way or whether it's going this way. So that's rather arbitrary, right? But what we do know is that in electricity, it's the electrons that do the flowing, okay? It's the motion of electrons in the wire, the conductor, And so we know that, okay, we have a preference, okay, for the motion that's electron tested, okay, because that's the one we're going to turn into electricity eventually. So you can understand that the directional arrow just has to do with an arbitrary circumstance. But yes, the magnet's a dipole, okay, it is polar, and there is direction involved, but there isn't any in these field lines. So these are lines of force, okay, this. And a field line would be this. Okay, I could have equal distance, equal distance, equal distance, equal distance, equal distance. And now I'm mixing two forces, so now the force field will change because where I mix the two forces, I get a dip or a change in the field. And so you could say that, okay, now equidistant, that is most, the pressure pulling versus the pressure pushing, okay, can change, and I can end up with a field line that has a shape to it, right? That's just saying that this is equal, this was equal, this is equal, this was equal in terms of the velocity created in a direction. So you're just saying, okay, I just want to know how fast the particle would move in this location so I can draw a chart of just that. So it's like a topographical map, right, of a mountain. I could draw the mountain like this, and, you know, the mountains, the altitude of the mountain, you know. And so, yeah, I could draw that, but it's sort of arbitrary because it just depends on what I'm measuring. Am I measuring altitude or am I measuring dimension? So I can measure two different things. I can measure how wide does the mountain get per a constant amount of distance, or I could be measuring its slope. I can be measuring different things and I get a different shape, topography. And so these are the field lines. They're arbitrary. They're really not. Arbitrary is the wrong word, but they're not the core. They're not the foundational function. They're an extension of the function. And yes, you can do this thing, and then you can say, well, if I'm using an electron as a test, it's going to move in this direction, okay? It's going to point in this direction. The compass needle will point in this direction. Doesn't mean anything's moving on these lines, so it's just completely wrong. And these are the real lines that matter. These are the lines you're going to break, okay, to be affected. It's these lines, when they hit you, that are the lines that are going to create an effect. This is the force, okay? This is just an approximation of a place in space where the forces are balanced or equal or, you know. It just depends on what you're measuring. So it's a huge difference, you know, between saying, you know, a ray of force, a line of force, and a field line. They're not the same things. All right. Okay. The guy was moving from north to south, and that he provides zero information or reasoning as to how it could be. So again, that's just it's the standard drawing of the where the iron filings line up or how the compass needles measure. And that is just meaningless, really, to the actual mechanism that's creating those locations, that's creating that balance and the force. The function of the magnet is completely different. The function of the magnet is not to create those lines that the iron filings line up on. And the second argument would be that you're really not going to mention here is that he was talking about how close the lines are to each other means it's more intense. It's not true, okay, because those lines end up being bigger, closer to the magnet, because the new magnets you're creating are repelling each other more strongly the closer they are to the magnet creating the induced magnetism. So none of this is really accurate. And the field lines, the lines of force, the closer those lines are, the more force, okay, the object has. So the more lines of force you have in an area, that will make something more stronger, you know, create a stronger pull or stronger repulsion. It's about the lines of force, not the distance between field lines. All right. I would point out that you did the same thing, so I didn't do the same thing. Fuck you, whatever. Okay, I didn't say something that's completely inaccurate. So I didn't do anything like the same thing. All right. With your dipole explanation. No, I didn't. I pointed out how you won't be able to show me, okay, drawing dipoles, how magnets behave differently than how electrons and protons would behave if I could smash them into each other. So if I forced an electron to sit on top of a proton, it'll behave exactly like magnets. The same field lines will be created. Okay. So fuck you. Anyway, I would point out that you did the same thing with your dipole explanation. No, I didn't. What I stated is still true. You didn't debunk it. Nobody else debunked it. Nobody showed how it doesn't work. Now, I know you started with an explanation, but then said it was too complicated. Yeah, I'm saying that, yes, you want to get into the nuances of the only way to understand how a magnet works is to understand what electrons and protons are. So, yeah, that's going to get more complicated because you people really have wacky ideas about what the hell those things are. You think electrons are dipoles, for fuck's sake. You're really stupid. All right, anyway. But I thought it important to point out that both provide explanations that are a bit hand-wavy. So this is a phrase people use, this hand-wavy thing. What the fuck does that even mean? All right. So it seems to imply, the use of it, that you don't have evidence for what you're saying. Well, my evidence is show me any counter-argument, okay? I'm saying dipoles would do this, and they do that, and they do that, and it's just like magnets, and the same exact rules apply, and it's about how much attraction and repulsion. So I diagrammed it pretty completely, so I don't call that hand-wavy, okay? That's not unevidenced when I draw you a fucking picture of it. So fuck you again. Second, your dipole model is that just meant to be an analogy. I stated it pretty clearly. It's pretty much an exact parallel if you can believe that there's the original magnet as a giant electron and a giant proton. And then you have smaller, dipoles. So I used the analogy. Okay, this was an analogy. When I said you have the big ocean liner and then you have the little boats, and the little boats would be going this way and the ocean liner's going that way. I mean, that's an analogy. I believe so because it would not hold up to observable actions of the magnetic field. Well, I'm saying, show me, fuckface. All right, most importantly, it does not account for the divergent or convergent. So this is, Ken Wheeler crapola. So it's swirling in or it's swirling out. That's what they mean by divergent and convergent. Is it swirling in or is it swirling out? Because that's all the magnet can do, is create a swirl going left or a swirl going right. So they're calling one convergent and they're calling the other divergent. Bullshit. Okay, so you say there's some convergent and divergent nature of the magnetic poles. No, there isn't. Both of them are saying, bring him on, okay? Both of the poles are creating the same attraction to other dipoles. Both of them are attracting the dipole. The dipole just has to turn and it moves right into the both poles the same way. Both forces are real things. They're both capable of attraction and both capable of repulsion, depending on what you're showing them. All right. Nature of the magnetic poles that can be seen when applying a magnet to a CRT TV screen. So you're saying that this is some sort of well-established proof, you understand completely what it's doing, so you want me to explain to you how a cart works, okay, that the electron is actually being shot in a direction and then being subtly moved by a giant magnetic field. And that the fact is that what you're really doing is shooting an electron here, and then shooting one 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 here. And each one of those electrons are on a path. They've been pointed in a direction. And you're applying a new magnetic field that's either going to repel them or attract them. And obviously, so that's going to mean they're going to bend and hit a part on the screen that they weren't aimed at. And so, yeah, just like the ferrocell, you could take a straight line and you can make it look like it's a curved line because you've changed the position of the dots. So the ones that are going at the top of the screen are all going to be bent a little bit this way. And the one that starts off closer to the magnetic field is going to get bent a lot more than the one further away. So you can understand how that's going to create the illusion of a curved line. But there is no curved line. Nothing took a curved path. It's where they hit the screen, you retard. Individual electrons are making the curved path. One electron doesn't curve. A bunch of electrons create a path that looks curved, but it just looks that way. So this is the same illusion as the Faro cell. I'm sorry you're fooled by it. I'm sorry you think something very complex. Somehow you think you've proven that this is what magnets do, okay? And it's somehow an established fact when all it is a Ken Wheeler and whatever, fractal girl toy experiment. It's just bullshit. It's such pseudoscience. I shouldn't even have to discuss it. It's such pseudoscience in the sense that you're really not understanding that the mechanism, what you're seeing, okay, is just a bent mirror. It's an illusion. All right. It does not account for the huge drop-off of the magnetic flux. And again, there's no huge drop-off. None of that crap is true. It's what is true is that you can't bend something. The difference between the center of the magnet of a North Pole, let's say, and the outer edge of the North Pole is going to be quite irrelevant to something moving towards it. Okay, so something moving towards it can't really feel any difference. So it's all the same to it. Okay, it's the same pulling force. So once you're looking right at the north side of something, it's not like it's an uneven field. It's a very even field. The flux at the center of each pole, nor would the dipole model work to explain the right-hand rule. So again, just bullshit. There's no right-hand rule in the magnet, retard. Okay, so all you're saying the right-hand rule has to do with is the fact that you're pushing electrons. And so what part of the magnet's more likely to push the electrons? And that's it, all right? That's all there is here. You go into a piece of, you're hitting an atomic surface, and you're bringing a magnetic field in. And what it's doing is that all the atoms are, in fact, dipoles in the sense that they're showing you a dipole. There's electrons on the outside, and there's a proton way on the inside. The plus is way far away from the minuses. So they're automatically dipolar in their structure. There's negative on the outside and positive on the inside. That's already has to be considered a dipole. The protons are always going to be further away from me than the electrons, no matter where I am looking at the magnet. But obviously, if I rearrange the electrons in different positions, then I'm going to see it as more negative or more positive. And so what you're doing when you're bringing the magnet in, you're moving the magnet, you're changing the polar locations, you're making the atoms bend, okay? So the electron is here. Now the electron's over here. That's all you're doing. Okay, and when you do that, you make the proton visible from that location. So you change the visual, what the atoms reflect to the universe, you change when you change the position of the atoms. And yes, there's a right-hand rule to that. That is, there's a rule basically saying that one end of the magnet's going to push the electron, the other ends are going to tend to pull electrons. That is, they're going to move atoms this way versus moving atoms that way. So there's a right-hand rule. So what? All right. What are your thoughts on this? Well, my immediate thought is, gee, you know, you're really bullshitty. Okay, I present a whole bunch of information. You say, oh, it's disproven by the 1943, hamburger experiment. You know, where Stephen Breaux's father, you know, bought a hamburger. He didn't have enough money, and so, he sold his kid to, a pig farmer, for the day, so he could get enough money to buy a hamburger. That experiment proves it. No, it doesn't prove anything. Understand, I am in full agreement with you that the guy in the video has no idea how magnets really work. And it's not just this guy in the video. It's every fucking person who says anything on the subject. Ken Wheeler has no idea how magnets work. No clue at all. He's not even a little bit close to the truth. All right. Hyperboloids. Have you seen Ken Wheeler's drawing? There's like 7,000 million little spirit ghost thingies happening. All this fucking crap flying all over the place doing all this shit. Do you think magnets really have a bunch of nuclear energy in them and they're creating all kinds of extra forces? No, they're just doing what we're doing. They're sitting there, force hits them, it bounces off, and now you can see me. You can't see me because I'm making radiation. No, I'm just reflecting the universe. And you could understand that, you know, if I wore scales or something, I could move my scales a little bit and I could change from green to red to purple. I could make myself look all kinds of different colors. You can understand that these are real facts and that matter's doing the same thing. Oh, fuck. Full agreement, blah, 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 blah. So anyway, yeah, nobody knows how magnets work. Really work, and is just regurgitating nonsense without applying any of his own gray matter. Well, the application is a little complicated. You have to start with irrational axioms and foundations. If you believe in the standard model, you're never going to understand anything. If you believe in the standard model of the atom, as, you know, electrons swirling all over the place and all this shit going all, you're not going to have any hope. If you think there's something called an, you know, electron spin, you're not going to get there. I am a new subscriber to your channel, and I'm interested to see more of your content. Well, you're 8 days in now. You know, you already had your other comments. All right, so we'll just do this one really quick. It's just a rag on the website. FYI, all of your links in the description are flagged. So again, they're not flagged by anything that's rational. Okay, the fact is the world has turned insane. So all of you assholes think VPNs are just to you know, that's where the people who want to be safe go. No, that's where the criminals go, is to a VPN, okay? And all of this encrypting crap is just crap, okay? There's nothing on my website I need to encrypt. I don't need security because I'm not afraid. Somebody could hack my website tomorrow and delete everything and I'll just re-upload it, okay? There's nothing I can lose. There's nothing I have to worry about. I don't need shields and moats and drawbridges, and I certainly don't need you to turn everything on my website into Chinese and then reinterpret it back into English again. I certainly don't need the whole internet to slow down tremendously, so we can spare anybody viewing my public information publicly. Yeah, I don't need any of that crap. So, yeah, that's why it's being flagged, because I am so abnormal that I don't need to worry about somebody stealing my content or destroying my content or hurting the content. And there's nothing on my website that's going to hurt anybody else, because I'm not taking any private information. I'm not watching where you move your mouses. I don't give a fuck. Okay, so, you know, just understand why these warnings pop up is because they really don't have anything to do with real security. Just like YouTube forcing you to have a mobile phone number doesn't have anything to do with keeping your account secure. I have credit card accounts, you know, where all I have to do is put in my password, that's all. They don't have to know my mobile number. They don't have to ring me up. They don't have to do any of that shit. And it's a bank account, for fuck's sake. Because, yeah, it's enough security, frankly. Unless you're an idiot and, you know, you decide to, you know, draw your password on the sidewalk or something. It's just too silly. I mean, the world has just gotten too fucking silly. So this flagged word, whatever, it means, okay, you get a warning from your browser because you have certain security levels. But the warning doesn't mean anything because there really isn't anything wrong with the website. Okay, according to the warnings, the website is linked to is a security risk because of a certification error. Well, again, it's not a real risk. It's that, no, it's not encrypted. That's right. I'm not going to ask you for your credit card number. You know, I'm not going to do any of that crap. Oh, fuck. Also, I like to point out that even when these warnings are ignored, which they should be, some links are broken. Well, thank you for telling me which ones. I mean, fuck you. Okay. I mean, 90%, 99%, they seem to all work for me. So, okay, there might be one in the, whatever, 600 links to the different videos that doesn't work. Sue me. And only provide a page not available message. Oh, my God. As a side note, is there... As a side note, is there a great difference between having ads in a scientific video versus posting all your science on a site like Effelisms? Effelisms? Yeah. And so this is like the silliest of the arguments, right? Because who cares? What percentage of people that go to the draftphysics.com website worry about what's in the title bar? I mean, I'm in studio at YouTube channel. Do I bother with any of that stuff? I don't give a fuck. So, I mean, there's a ton of websites on top of other domain names. And so, but it's the, who could care? So it's hardly an advertisement. It's not something you're forced to deal with. It's way in this little title bar. It's absolutely so obscure. It can't even, it's not even part of the website directly. I mean, to compare it to these obnoxious ads, I mean, I just gotta say, fuck you. I mean, how, you know, I'm supposed to take you seriously and you're gonna waste my time with this kind of nonsense? Fuck you. Alright. Pointing out the same concerns, why would you want this unrelated noise interrupting your science? Well, how the fuck exactly does it interrupt any of it? I mean, I could show the website. I mean, I don't know. You're making an accusation that somehow the website is interrupted because, you know, way... Let's see. Where the hell is it? You know, way... Oh, you can't even see the title bar in this clip. But, yeah, way up here in the title bar, it doesn't say draftphysics.com. Now, I could force it to. I really could. I can just put a little bit of code in the page, and I could force it to change the name. But why should I do that? Why should this bother an intelligent person? Anybody who is going to understand anything about physics, you really think this is something they worry about? No, only a kook would worry about it. Sorry, but yeah, I mean, and so why are you bringing it up? The fact that you even notice it, you know, makes me wonder what your real agenda is. You know, maybe you are just one of these fake newsers. You're just being a poser here, pretending, blah, blah, blah. You know, just to squirm your way into causing some kind of mayhem. Because who the fuck would care about this shit? I have a life, okay? This is one piece of my life, doing these physics arguments. The rest of my life, frankly, I'm not making it your business. If you're interested in my other interests, that's fine. But I'm not forcing you to be interested. Shithead. I mean, how many times on this website have I used the term donotgod.com? Once? Zero? Except for right now? No, I don't. So if you choose to mix the subjects, that's your prerogative. But it's not anything I've imposed on you, fuckhead. All right, pointing out the same concerns, why would you want this unrelated to interrupt? All right, so there's no interruption. I am poking fun, okay? Do that somewhere else, too. I'm really, really, really uninterested in poking fun, okay? Fun doesn't interest me, and, you know, yeah, save your poking for somebody who wants to be poked. Simply for the sake of it. Gee. Fuck you. So you're the one making noise for the sake of it. You're the one interrupting my physics. For no good reason. All right. No ill will. Well, you just did something pretty ill-willy. You just wasted my goddamn fucking neurons. I just wanted to let you know your website and links are not working as intended. Well, I think they are. If 99.3% of them are working, then that's okay with me. That's how I intend it to work. God damn. I just hate this planet. So here's an asshole, not on the subject. Look, it's nice you have passion for different subjects, but blowing up the planet is not the subject of this website. So please take that crap where it's appropriate. Jesus. Nobody can stay on the fucking subjects. Alright, anyway. So, enough of a video. Alright, so we'll get rid of that. And I'll get the hell out of here. So, anyway, that has been another draftphysics.com or debatephysics.com or draft science on YouTube. Blah, 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 blah. And such. Video presentation. And, yeah, that'll do.